States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the USDF official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we're going to hear from Gay McCabe about the USDF Adult and Youth Regional Team Competitions, and Christine Smith will be here to talk about sport horse training and preparation for showing in hand. But first of all, the US Equestrian Federation has announced the athlete and horse combinations who will represent the Duta Corporation's US dressage team at the CDIO 3-star in Odense, Denmark on May 12th through the 16th. Robert Dover, as usual, will be the chef d'équipe, and his team will be Catherine Bateson Chandler riding Jane Clark's Alcazar, Susan Dutter riding Tim Dutter Inc.'s Currency DC, Jennifer Hoffman on her own XXL Rubinio NRW, and finally Beatrice Marino from Oak Creek, Colorado, on her own Stefano 8. And the USDF would like to wish all of them the very best of luck in Odense. And now our first guest is the longtime Youth Programs Committee member Gay McCabe, who is here to tell us about the USDF Youth and Adult Regional Team Competition. Gay, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
We're going to talk about something that you've been involved with for a while, this USDF team competition. But we should explain that there is a place for juniors and then adults. Now, let's go back to your experience, first of all, in the junior team competition, how that came about and what your involvement was.
Well, USDF, it was initially a Dr. Benson team and sponsored by Dr. Benson, and it has evolved since. I've been involved with the show since approximately 2000, and well, actually, I take that back. It's 91 or 2. And it's just a fun team show. The kids come to the show, and if they don't have, there's three or four riders to a team. And if they don't have enough to be on a team, we find a team to put them on, or we'll put loose riders together to form a team. And in our area, we require at least two of the riders to be riding the same level so we can put teams into different divisions. And then they are and we put six teams together on at least six teams in a division. So everyone goes home with ribbons, neck ribbons, for their team placings. And in addition to the team competition, we also have an open classes so they can warm up and practice, and so it's another show in addition to the team competition. How we run our team competition is we also have a stable management competition too. So the kids, besides just competing in dressage, they are also competing for a different award, and they do. They have to take a written test. We do a soundness jog and turnout jog. They have to volunteer at the show, and then they take a written test too. So we combine all the scores, and then so they're competing for an addition prize too. It's over a two-day period. They ride one test on one day and the second test on the second day. And then we have an award ceremony. In addition to the award ceremony and all the other activities that's going on, we do a pizza party, and we also do some kind of an educational event each year. We usually bring either a veterinarian, a farrier, or a trainer to come in and talk about something specific. So that's sort of that in a nutshell on the youth. It's a wonderful event. The kids always enjoy it. We try to keep it low-key and not have a lot of pressure, but we do keep them busy too.
What sort of age group is that then, Gay?
We've had as young as six, but it is through age 21, that competition year. So it's a junior and young rider competition.
Okay. And when you mention we, in terms of the host, who does the hosting? Is it by region? And how is that organized? Because obviously this is quite you know, a substantial enterprise to host a team competition. Talk us through that process.
Sure. Each region is allowed to have two competitions per region, and the different GMOs or organizations within a region can apply to host a youth competition, and that goes through the regional director. And Oregon Dressage Society has always hosted one since the inception, and so that's how that. And then USDF provides the neck ribbons and the champion and reserve champion ribbons for each of the divisions.
Okay.
And there are written, USDF provides the written guidelines on how to put the team competition together.
Okay. And how often do these take place then, Gay?
It's an annual event.
Okay. Okay, and obviously you mentioned there's a fun element there to it, as education as well as the fun element to it all, and that obviously is very helpful for the youth, junior and young riders. Now, does that translate to the adult version?
Well, yes. In fact, the adults, I've had more than one competitor tell me that if they could only ride at one show a year, it would be the adult team competition.
Because...
Well, they like the hanging out with friends and coming together and having the support of their team. We do a banquet or a team dinner on our first night evening, and we do some fun games during that. We do some fun awards like the oldest horse rider competitor. We try to come up with different fun things to give awards to. I actually had one competitor give an award for the lowest score, so someone would go home with something. As it turned out, she was the winner.
Now, you mentioned that there are two tests for the junior. How do the tests work in the adult version?
It's the same thing. They ride the two tests. We have it set up so it's like introductory A and B is one test. And then introductory B and C, and so it's a combination. So like training is training 1 and 2, and the next division would be training 2 and 3, so that if they're not ready to canter, we've got for youth and even adults will do A and B, that they're just getting started and they're not comfortable in a show facility, or they're riding a young horse, they have that ability to do. And it will go up, and I've actually had through, I believe, the highest level we've done is third level. But we're willing to, you know, accommodate any level.
So this presumably appeals to the adult returner to the sport, you know, to take up the sport again, maybe, or maybe take it up for the first time, because it has that more social component to it.
Yeah, oh yes, most definitely. The adults, you know, if you're coming into riding at an older age, in fact, I was USDF regional director, now adult ed chair, excuse me, when the information came that the fastest growing population of riders were women, 45 and 50, their families were done, they had extra money, so they were now able to do this, and since I was involved in the youth program, I thought the adults would like this too, because I knew, being at that age level at that time, that, you know, I might not be so confident to hitch my trailer and go to a show off by myself for the first time. And so, you know, if you were going with friends, it might not be so intimidating to try. We also do, this is not a licensed show. We have our own what we call league shows in Oregon, so there's less of a pressure there, and it's financially more feasible because you don't have all the other requirements, too. So it's sort of like a step into the show ring, and we keep it low-key. All the competitors are also required to volunteer, so there's a social time there. They get to talk and learn something about showing behind the scenes, which I think is important. And no one seems to mind that. In fact, a lot of people find that very a good part of the showing experience.
Now, are these competitions held at recognized shows, or do you host them separately, Gay?
They can be either at recognized licensed shows or even schooling shows.
And how do our listeners find out about these?
United States Dressage Federation has guidelines already drawn up and ready to help you step through the process. And you can make it really your own event.
Now, you've been very involved because you were chair, or are you still chair of the adult committee?
No, I'm not at this time.
So obviously you got very, very involved in how this is structured. To give us a sense of, you know, how the tests are determined, you know, both for the youth and for the senior Gay. You know, how do you decide which tests will be used for the adult competition?
I use the same concept as for the youth. It's, again, just the two tests, and they conjoined tests, so like intro A and B, intro B and C, training 1 and 2, training 2 and 3. And so they can choose which two tests they want to ride, and they can ride more than one horse, or two people can share the same horse. They do have to ride different divisions, though. We do make sure that the same horse and rider isn't riding the same twice. So we follow USEF rules and guidelines on with regards to that. And, yes.
So very much a fun event, very fun social event then to be included, as you say, either at a recognized competition or at another event. And I'm sure, you know, with your involvement, you've got a lot out of this. So what would you tell people that are listening, any members out there thinking, gosh, this sounds like fun, I want to have a go at them, what would you say to them?
Oh, definitely give it a try. And like I said, there is an event in your area and you don't have a team, ask. You can very easily be put on a team and or find other kids or adults that are attending and be put together and get to know people, different people. We've had some people put together on teams that became very fast good friends.
Now, do you have snazzy names for these teams, Gay? Do they name them, or do you name them? How do you do that?
The teams come up with their own names. One year during an Olympic year with the juniors, we had them create country names and colors for their countries. But the adults, we also, for the adults, we will have them choose who they think is the best name, and we give a prize to the team that has the best name. And they can be quite creative and fun names, too.
It certainly sounds like a fun component to competition, and they can find out more information, I'm sure, on the website at usdf.org. Any final thoughts, Gay, about the adult team or the junior, the youth and adult team competitions here at the USDF?
Well, if you don't have one in the area, I would try to see why not and get one started. Again, they're a fun event, and you can make it what you want and do different fun things with initial with the kids. Our announcer is really good about coming up with games and gives out little prizes for them. And so you can really add and make it what you'd like.
A great way to participate in the sport of dressage. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program, Gay, and telling us about the USDF team competition.
My pleasure.
And now in our education segment, Christine Smith, the owner of Wildest Expectations Farm in Stephen City, Virginia, is here to give us some advice on preparing to show in hand. Christine breeds, trains, shows, and sells Selle Francais, Danish, and Oldenburg Warmbloods, several of which have been placed in the top 5 for USDF Horse of the Year awards. Christine was a presenter at the inaugural USDF Youth Dressage Sport Horse Handlers Breeders Seminar held at the 2015 Dressage at Devon Show. And Christine joins me now. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for taking time to join us from your very busy schedule. We should explain before we talk about showing your horse in hand what you do as a day job and enables you to pick the stallions even that you want in the first place.
Well, I am a flight attendant for United Airlines, and I've been doing that for almost 28 years. It's been 27 plus years.
That's a long time, and obviously it's enabled you to get around the world and see a lot of horses as well. How do you fit in your dressage life?
Well, what I do, I actually breed dressage and hunter jumper horses. I breed talented sport horses. They go in any discipline. And what I do is I try to bid trips where I'm home part of every day. So I'll tend to bid a 2-day trip where I'm home in the morning, I leave in the afternoon, I'm overnight someplace, and then I come back the next morning and I'm feeding my horses in the afternoon. And then I have high school kids that are future Farmers of America that have fed for me for years and years and years.
So how many horses do you have? What setup do you have then? And you're in Virginia, aren't you?
We're in Virginia. We're in the Shenandoah Valley, Wildest Expectations Farm. We've moved locations 3 times. We've gone from a rented 5 acres to a bought 5 acres to a bought 20 acres. We're a small farm. We only have 7 horses on the farm right now. We're currently waiting on 2 foals, and then we'll be breeding 2 more mares this year. So we try to keep it small and scaled back so that I can handle it along with my other job.
So let's talk about showing in hand then. Why you chose that route, you know, rather than riding. What is it that appeals to you about showing in hand?
Well, prior to flying people, I used to transport horses by air, and my first mare came to me as a result of shipping horses by air. She was given to me as a gift, and my entire farm has basically happened as a result of owning this one mare. And when I bred her, my parents helped me get that started. He said, let's breed her once, let's breed her twice. You can keep one, you can sell one, and maybe break even, which, of course, if you're into breeding, you know that that's really false. Horses are where you spend your money. They are not where you make your money unless you're providing a service, which is where the showing in hand part came in. I started taking the babies to some of these breed shows, and I went to hunter shows, I went to dressage shows, not knowing the difference at the time, and that was back in 93, 4, 5, something like that. And then I preferred the way the dressage breed shows are run. You go in front of the judge one horse at a time instead of all your horses lined up, and by the time the judge gets to you with the hunter shows, your horse has just melted down. It's just tired of being there. With the dressage shows, you can get your horse ready. You can take it in. You have a one-on-one with the judge. The judge gives you a score sheet, which gives you a reference point on your breeding program. You can use it for marketing. You can use it for sales. You can use it for rethinking what direction your breeding is going if you get the same comment again and again and again that maybe your horse needs, you know, better this or better that, then you can start looking for stallions that are going to improve your breeding. And you're getting many, many high-quality opinions on your horses. Plus, it gets your young horses out and gets them exposed to what they're going to be once you're riding them. And truly, we're not breeding in hand horses. We're breeding performance horses. And taking them to the breed shows gets them prepared for a performance life.
Right. So let's talk about those early outings then, and maybe you have a few tips for our members on how to begin the process of showing in hand, what you should prepare for.
There are basically 4 things. If you can work with your horse at home, there are 4 things that if you work on, and then either you're showing the horse yourself or you're handing your horse off to a professional handler, your horse is going to be ahead of the game if it knows how to do 4 things at home. Horse has got to be able to walk quietly with you. It's got to be able to stand up quietly, not fidgeting and being agitated and distracted. It's going to be able to transition from a walk to a trot back to a walk. And it's going to be able to turn right. If you can't turn right, you can't do a triangle. And it helps you not get stepped on, and it keeps the horse better balanced. So if you're at home and you want to get your horse ready to go to a show, either you're showing it yourself or you're handing it off to a professional handler, those four things are going to put your young horse way ahead of the game than a horse that's just stood in the field, eaten hay, eaten grain, gotten carrots, and had its nose scratched.
And so one of the fundamental disciplines is that personal space that he or she has to respect, that, you know, when you're training them the very beginning, Christine, that they need to understand that personal space and learn to turn away from you, as you say, to turn right, that sort of thing, which takes a while with babies.
It does. But if you do that from the start and you only ever take right turns, everybody, it's so much easier just to pull your horse on top of you and turn left. But that's the fastest way to get stepped on. And it's, if you watch horses play in a field, the dominant horse is the one who is spinning the other horse. And you're basically putting yourself into the submissive horse position if you're turning left. If you're turning right, you are spinning that horse away from you, and you are being the dominant participant in that exchange. So you're always trying, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, but three rights will always make a left.
Right.
And if I'm standing in the aisleway and I need to take a left to go into a stall, I'll take three rights to do it.
Interesting. So that's
just walking.
That's
even turning into a stall, you can be training your horse.
Yeah.
I don't have an arena. I don't have a huge, you know, I don't have a fabulous facility set up. I am a working breeding farm. And it doesn't look like I ever train my horses, but I never take a left turn. And anytime I'm walking them to and from, you know, a field to the barn to a field, I'm walking more slowly, I'm walking more quickly, I'm making them transition with me instead of trying to keep up with them or dragging them along behind me. Every opportunity, every time you touch your horse is an opportunity for a quick, short training session. With young horses, they don't have much of an attention span. A young horse that's, you know, anywhere from day 1 to 6 months old probably has a 10 to 15 minute attention span tops. Anything beyond that, you're just annoying them.
Now, you talk about touching them. Every time you touch them is a learning opportunity for them, and it's an important foundation to their discipline as well, obviously showing in hand. But let's talk about that, Christine, you know, where you touch them, especially with turning right, they have to learn to move away from you. Just talk about touching them in front of the shoulder there, where you should learn to and where you should make a practice of, touching them.
You actually don't touch them to turn them. I actually, with my right hand, I've got the reins or the lead shank, and if you think of your arm coming out of your shoulder and then a right angle and then forward to the shank, what I'll do is I will invert my elbow so that my elbow is pointing forward and my arm is now reaching under the youngster's throat so that my left arm is on their right side. And I'm not touching the horse with my elbow, because if you think about when you're riding, if you're riding and you push in on the horse with your left side, the horse is going to bend around your left leg and turn left. So if you push the horse with your right elbow in its left neck or side, you're going to be actually turning the horse on top of you to your left. So if you reach under the horse to the right with your right hand, and then you hold your left hand up into their face with your hand open toward their eye, and you walk through their eye holding your hand into their face, into their eye, and walk through them, they will move to the right. And you're not trying to, and you don't bend them to the left. I watch people out there in the ring all the time, and they'll have the they'll have the rope, they'll have the lead, they'll have the reins, and they'll have their right elbow in their right neck, or rather the horse's left neck, and the horse is crossing over in front of them every time. They are accidentally asking the horse to do exactly what they don't want it to do. And the horse is complying, but they get mad at the horse because the horse is doing something they don't think they want it to do, but that's what they're asking it to do. So I don't actually physically touch the horse. I steer from both sides of the horse under its neck.
So part of that learning process, of course, is to get the horse comfortable in that zone, that space where you're using your arm at a height where he can see it. Now, mm-hmm. some would say, okay, you've got to be careful you don't make them head shy. Let's talk a little bit about that, how you make sure they don't get head shy. They learn the signals.
Head shy basically comes from if you're hitting them. And since you're actually not touching them, you're if you think about it, if somebody comes up and puts their hand into your face, you back up. And that's exactly what you're doing with the horse. You're not hitting it in the eye because, boy, I'll tell you, that's the quickest way to make a horse want to jump away from you and become head shy. But if you turn, you face the horse, you know, on a 90-degree angle, and you've got your hand up there, it's going to move its head away because it's more comfortable to not have your hand in their eye. And so all their, you know, you pull back a little bit with your right hand so that they know some change is coming. It's, you know, like a half halt, and they know there's going to be some sort of a transition. You come back with your right hand so they know there's something that's going to change. And then you bring your hand up to their face, up to their eye, and they go, oh, you're moving right. And they just do.
Yeah, that's an important distinction, isn't it? Because often people move their hand up too quickly, not necessarily hitting the horse, but the horse gets startled because of that sudden movement.
Yeah, and if the horse starts, you know, if the horse tries to avoid your left hand up by its face by moving forward to avoid you, you just pull back with your right. That's why you don't hold your reins or your rope or your shank with both hands, because you can separate. You can separate your movements if you've got your reins, your rope, your shank in your left hand, or rather in your right hand, and you don't, you know, you're not limited how far you can reach. If you're moving your hands are independent.
Right. And then
I don't know if I explained that well. I'm sorry.
No, that's explanatory. I mean, it's an important foundation, isn't it, with young horses when you're mm-hmm. training them at home, preparing them for the show ring, and then teaching them to go into straight line again, to turn again and turn again. Give mm-hmm. us some other little tips about that format and how people can learn to do that efficiently, and so the horse very quickly gets comfortable with it.
Just do it quietly and gently every time you're moving your horse. If you, you know, if you're going out to your barn and you've got to take your horse across a road to a field, just do transitions where you're moving the horse around as you go, so that every time the horse goes to and from the field or back to the barn, the horse knows it's going to have to think about what you want, not just think about what it wants. I'd really like to talk about the score sheets and the four different things that are being judged at a dressage breed show.
Absolutely, yes, because from the training goes to the show ring for the first time, and people need to know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that happens most often, and you can always tell which owners have got their mind on the big trot. The big trot is clearly the most impressive looking thing that people are looking for. When you're in the arena and there are people watching from the sidelines, you get your biggest whoops and hollers when a horse does a lovely, lofty, floating, elastic, big trot. But if that's the only thing that people work on at home and the only thing that they focus on, that's only 30% of your score. So basically you're leaving 70% on the table. If that's the only thing you care about, and the only thing that you work on. A lot of times people at home will work on, we're going to turn to the right and we're going to blast off into a trot. If that's what you've worked, every time the horse turns right, it thinks it's going to be blasting into this big trot. It's going to get tight in the back. It's going to lose a lot of its elasticity because it can't move when it's that tense. And you're going to lose your walk, which is 30%. You're going to lose some of your confirmation comments because that's 30% as well. And if your horse is just looking for when it's going to be trotting, it can't stand still for that most important first impression. So people need to think about working on standing still. Horse is over there in its space. You're in front of it, maybe 2 feet away from it, away from its space, and the horse is capable of standing still over there by itself in its space. You can walk up to it, but it can't walk up to you. You can move it forward and back, but the horse needs to be able to provide that first impression for the judge. The judges, when you walk into the ring, the judge is judging you before you're actually even in front of them. They watch you walk up to them. And if your horse is already tense because it knows it's got to do that big trot, and we're 2 stages away from the trot when you walk into the ring. We are a stand-up confirmation away from the big trot, and we are a relaxed, flowing, swinging walk away from that big trot. So if you've trained your horse that any time it's being handled, it's going to go in and blast off to a trot, you're truly losing 70% of your score before you even get started. And then the general impression is only 10%, but that's basically how all those three first pieces tie in, and you know how they use their confirmation to develop and deliver their walk, and how they use their confirmation to then transition up into the trot, and then their behavior is a large part of that general impression as well. So owners have to remember that they're not just looking to trot. And when they see us in the rings, a lot of times the professional handlers will get these horses that have, that's what they've been schooling at home. We get them out in the warm-up ring, and all the owner wants to see is the big trot because they know what it can do out in the field. And we're just trying to get it to listen to us so that when we ask it for the trot, it is going into it with a really smooth transition.
So importantly then, from the training aspect, some of those tools that you can do at home, preparing them for the show ring, you need to establish those points, as you say, before you actually take them to their first show. Then those things need to be well established.
Yeah, my horses at home do the big trot in the field by themselves. When I'm working with them, we jog. We jog slow and we jog faster, but we jog. We don't ever do a blowout trot at home. You get so much energy from a horse show just by being at a horse show that the horse will deliver. The horse, and one of the most frequent comments you get from owners is, he doesn't act like this at home, because, you know, they're up. These horses are up. They are ready to do exciting things. And if they're capable of listening and responding to different transitions, you're going to be able to get that big trot because they're capable of listening. They're schooled. I mean, a schooled horse is going to perform better, period. A schooled horse is going to perform better.
Any other tips, Christine?
There's another really wonderful thing about going to the horse shows, especially with the youngsters. Eventually, you are going to have to sit on these horses at a horse show. And a horse that's gone to a breed show has already been exposed to skirts, hats, clipboards with papers slapping on them, banners, golf carts, tents. I happen to live 30 minutes from Upperville Colton Horse Show, and there is all of that and then some around the showgrounds, and I'll go over with a truck and trailer and a couple of those horses, and I'll just walk around with the babies. Just unload them, mare foal, a couple of people with me. People will walk up to them and want to pet the baby, and it just desensitizes them And if you're able to do that before you actually take them to a show, all the better. If you've got a local schooling show where everybody's doing little hunter hack stuff, or lower levels of dressage where you're not going to be taking a baby up and, you know, messing up somebody's Grand Prix performance, but, you know, someplace where there's a lot of activity that they don't see at the farm, they're going to have a lot better experience when they go to a show and they're showing for themselves for the first time as well.
Absolutely. Lots of valuable foundation work that you can do before you actually have to put them into that performance situation. Anything else that you would like to add, Christine, that could be helpful to our members who are beginning their showing career in hand?
Have fun. If you're honestly, have fun. If you're not having fun at it, you're just going to be frustrated. It's going to, there's no point in doing any of this unless you're having a good time. I pay closest attention to the, not to the numbers of the scores that the judges give, but to the comments. I like to read what the comments are, because then I can look at it and see what is stuff that I can fix and what stuff that's just confirmation that I can't control. But I never go out to never is a huge word. I rarely go to the barn in a bad mood, and I don't lay my hands on my horses if I'm in a bad mood, because they only learn that people are miserable. I try to make everything I do with the youngsters positive, so that when I'm selling them to somebody, they've got a horse with a really great foundation and they think people rock and we do fun things with them. I try to keep it fun for me. I try to keep it fun for my horses. I try to keep it fun for my owners.
Good advice, Christine. Thank you very much indeed for that, and for taking the time to come on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
You can find more educational resources and information online at eTrack. Just go to usdf.org, where the information there is free to USDF members. You can follow the USDF on social media. Just look for USDF on Facebook and Twitter, and through the new USDF Connection app. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.